Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 336. And we're going to continue with Numbers chapter 17, verse 5, where God tells Moses to tell the Eliezer, the son of Aaron, since they had a commission. So now he's not speaking to Aaron, since Aaron is not going to do it. So God says directly, you tell Eliezer to do it. And this is a direct commission to him to take all the pans of all the rebel princes of Israel and basically melt them and put them around the altar to be a memorial. And so this is what we read in verse 5, to be a memorial unto the children of Israel, to the end that no common man, in other words, nobody from the family of Aaron, that is not of the seed of Aaron, so everybody else became known as common men, Israelites and Levites in this sense. You see? And basically, the word in Hebrew is not common, it's stranger, zar. You see? So, really, common does not convey the meaning for it. Zar means a stranger. So, anybody who is not of the seed of Aaron is going to be a stranger, considered a stranger by God to this task of the tabernacle. You see? And so that's basically what it says here. Oftentimes when people translate into other languages, they want to convey what they think is what it means, but in the process, in translating a language, you always lose something, so I have to go to the original to really find out exactly what God said. And that's something very unfortunate about translations. If they put stranger, you would have known exactly what God said, and then you would be able to comprehend that idea from the point of view of God. Anybody that is not of Aaron, as far as this task is concerned, is a stranger. You see? And not a stranger in the sense of from another country, but a stranger in the sense of he's not a part of the tabernacle crew. And so this is what he's saying here. And so he said, you make it as a memorial before God. And no one else is going to be doing it anymore from this time on. And there was only, we recorded history, there was only one person who was a king of Judah that actually thought that he was big enough in his own sight, and he used to be a righteous man until arrogance went to his head and haughtiness and pride, and he went into the temple and God struck him with leprosy, and the priest threw him out and warned him, that this is not something for him to do, because king no king, he is a stranger in the temple. You see, and that's how God regarded everybody else. That's why he said in the prophets, who is he that dares approach me? So if God doesn't call us to any task, to any position, to any calling, to any particular place, we better not be there. You see? And you have a lot of people who are arrogant and haughty and proud in their own sight, and they appoint themselves and exalt themselves and place themselves in this position or that, you see, and they have no respect for the law of God. God made it very plain that unless He causes people to approach Him, they should not. And Jesus Christ made it very plain. No man, no matter who that man is, no man can come unto me unless the Father calls him. It's all the same concept, and that's what God is making here very plain. And He gave us an example. 250 that dare do that were zapped. You see? And He's not a respecter of persons. Now, even though He may not do it immediately at this point, when the time comes, He's going to take care of all those people who are proud and arrogant. And that's what Christ was also saying about Lucifer, who became the devil. He thought that he was big enough to approach God whenever he wants to, and he was going up to heaven to dethrone him, topple him, take over, whatever it may be in a place where he's not called upon to be. You see, when God allows him, that's one thing, but when he did it there with the wrong attitude, then that's what these people were doing. Well, God threw him down. That's what Christ was saying. I've seen Satan in a fall like a lightning from heaven. And we should learn lessons from that. An awful lot of people today are not learning these lessons, have no fear of God, and not only men, even women approach God in certain ways that God hasn't called them to certain places, certain positions, you know, they're self-appointed just with their own arrogance and haughtiness and pride, you know, I'm just as good as you are, and that to them is a criteria to be where they want to be. Yeah? If God hasn't called us to be in a certain position, it doesn't make any difference who we are and how much intelligence we have and how capable we are. We just don't belong there. That's all there is to it. So God was making an example here. This is Jesus Christ speaking here and doing this thing and giving us an example. And he said that this thing that are going to be on the altar, when people look at it, they would remember that when people rebelled, you see, against God and came to a place that they had no business being there, he zapped them. You see, and people would look at it. Of course, you know, you cannot look at it because you could not go in. You see, only the priest could see it, but at least they knew that this is what happened, and they could pass it on from generation to generation. So again, he said, you do that to be memorial unto the children of Israel, every single one of us, to this very moment. Let it be a memorial for us. And how many of us remember this? Because to begin with, we do not remember Moses, we do not study this. You see? And so he said, it should be a memorial to the children of Israel, to the end that no common man that is not of the seed of Aaron draw near to burn incense before the Lord. And for that matter, any other thing that God has not called upon us to do. It's just an example. And he said, don't do that, that he fear not as Korah. In other words, our end will be just like that of Korah. If not today, then tomorrow. When the time comes, God will choose the time and the place. And as his company, as the Eternal spoken to him by the hand of Moses. And God told us, Jesus Christ told us, remember the law of Moses. Because Moses warned us not to be that kind of people. And did the children of Israel listen? Well, we're going to find out. Verse 6. But on the morrow, all the congregation, all of them, not just few of them, all of them, of the congregation of Israel, murmured against Moses and against Aaron. Wasn't good enough what they just experienced. They could never learn from it. They had no fear. You see? That's the kind of people they were. And there are those among us who are still of the same nature to this very day. And so they murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, you have killed the people of the Eternal. Well, that's quite a compliment, you know, that Moses and Aaron had the power to send fire and then to create earthquakes and, you know, open the ground and things like that. They knew exactly who did it, you see, but they're putting the blame on Moses and Aaron. It's as if, you know, they asked God to do it, and so they accuse them of doing that. Now look, how Satan, the devil, and his demons are just swooping down and filling the hearts of people who are inclined in that direction anyway. Rebel rousers, evildoers, wicked people, that's what they were. You see, had no faith, had no fear of God. Rebellious people, stiff-necked. That's what Moses told them, from the day that I have known you, you've been that kind of people, rebellious and stiff-necked. And a lot of us are still to this very day that kind of people. You see? And so, it's no wonder that they came up with this accusation, because there are people that do the same just today. Just like today, you know, the same thing. And so they said, you have killed the people of the Eternal, of the Lord. So Moses and Aaron were not the people of the Lord, but the others were, the rebel rousers. And that's what the devil does to us when we listen to him. He makes us believe that good is evil, and evil is good, and light is darkness, and darkness is light. And when you read a lot of the writings of the people of God nowadays, you know, for different writers, different magazines and organizations, and you see what they write about each other, and the way they tackle things, and the way they accuse one another, you see the same spirit. We're not different. We haven't learned anything, many of us. And so verse 7 we read, and it came to pass, when the congregation was assembled against Moses and against Aaron, that they looked toward the tent of meeting, and behold, the cloud covered it. It looks like, you know, the Lone Ranger, you know, in the movie. There's the trouble, and somebody's in trouble, and, you know, the Lone Ranger comes, you know, the last moment to deliver and help, and things like that. And that happened so many times here. You see? And that's the kind of people they were. Well, God had to intervene. And a lot of people, unfortunately, are functioning that way, and God is going to have to intervene, but, you know, at this time He hasn't chosen to do it like that. In those days, He was in their midst, so He was right there in the neighborhood all the time. And nowadays, He lets people go their own way, and lets Israel go their own way. He lets the church go its own way and do her own thing, even though He warns her to come out of Babylon, and many are not listening. Majority are not listening, only very few do. But He's going to choose the time when He's going to appear. And when He does, as the Apostle Paul said, it is a fearful thing to fall into the hand of the Eternal, because He's a consuming fire. He's not going to play games with anybody, men, women, and children. And this is what happens at this point. The cloud appears, and the glory of the Eternal appeared. And Moses and Aaron came to the front of the tent of meeting. They knew that that's the time to go there. He wants them there so he can deliver a message. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, get you up from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. Now, this is not the first time that he wanted to do it. You see? That's his own people. Now, that's what he said also to the churches in Revelation. That if you don't behave yourself, I'll come quickly among you, and I'll take away your angel, and I'll throw you into tribulation. It's the same God, the same person, the same mind, the same book, the same story, the same people, the same attitude, the same devil that still does his work to this very day. And most of us go about our ways as if nothing happened, walking in blindness and darkness, and our eyes do not see the cloud and the glory of the Lord. And so we have no fear, and we open our mouth oftentimes, and we have attitudes that we do, and we do not see the glory of the Lord. And so this is what he says to them: get out of them, because I just feel like destroying them. Well, again, Moses and Aaron, they're not interested in the destruction of Israel, as rebellious as they are, though they come against them. They're not of the attitude that says, oh yes, fuck it to them. There are a lot in our midst who feel that way and think that way about the government, about people around, about other churches, about other leaders, about those that hurt them. Oh God, fuck it to them. Kill them. Destroy them. Let them all know that you are God. That's not God. That's not Moses and Aaron. That's not Stephen, who said, oh Lord, lay it not to their charge, who were stoning him. You see? That was not Jesus Christ on the cross. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. How many of us have these attitudes? How many of us really are converted? Or just playing games that we are? That we are the people of God? And so, Moses and Aaron, they fell on their faces. And Moses said unto Aaron, take your fire pan and put fire therein from off the altar, and lay incense thereon, and carry it quickly unto the congregation, and make atonement for them. That's what was on his mind. This is what should be on our mind when we see people do what they do, even though then it may be aimed at us. And you see all those people, somebody writes an article, tells something about someone, and that person immediately, you know, rises up. He wants to defend himself or herself. And they just have to write another article and speak evil of the other people. That's not Moses and Aaron. That's not Christ. That's not Stephen. And he can go on and on like that. You see? That's us, carnal-minded people. Like the Corinthians, as Paul said, aren't you carnal? Look at the way you talk about each other. Speak evil of each other. Have divisions. You see? Well, we've got to go a long way, baby, as some people say. And this is what it says to him. You go and make an atonement for them. For there is wrath going out from the Eternal. The plague is begun. We are plagued in many ways. The divisions that we have are a plague that came upon us because of us, not only the leaders, but all of us who are guilty. You see, to one degree or the other, if we're not careful with our attitude. Verse 12, and Aaron took as Moses spoke and ran into the midst of the assembly, the midst of the Kahal, Here it's called the assembly instead of congregation. Other places it says congregation. It's the same word, kahal. They should be consistent with the translation, but they are not. And behold, the plague was begun among the people, and he put on the incense and made atonement for the people. And that's what Christ does for us. We're not worthy of it oftentimes. You see, but because of his grace and mercy, and he gave his life for us, he does it. And the people of Israel were not even repenting, and he was already making atonement for them. And for whom Christ died? For the righteous people? No, for the sinners who were not repenting in the moment. And then he already told them, or told God, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. So he was already making an atonement, you see, as it says, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. How many of us have this attitude? We call ourselves Christians, followers of Christ. How can anybody tell that we are by our conduct? And then we have the arrogance and the haughtiness and the pride to think that we can go to the world and teach them something. You see, when they look at us and see what we are made of. What a mockery. You see, that's a black eye for God, our behavior and conduct. And many of us are that way, unfortunately. And you see throughout the entirety of the so-called Christian world, you see, divisions, strife, speaking evil of one another, accusing one another. You see it among nations. You see it everywhere. Because the same devil is there, the same demons are there. They've been right here, this moment, that we are reading of, and they are still today alive and well. And we are falling for it all the time instead of having our eyes on the cloud, on the glory of the Lord, and walking in the fear of God. To our shame, we are what we are. Verse 13. We read, and he stood between the dead and the living. It's as though telling God, I'm not going to let you go beyond this point. With my own body, I'm going to protect those rebel rousers. You see, with his own body, Jesus Christ protected us from the wrath of God. We all deserve to be dead a long time ago. This is what God wants to see in us. That's the reason why he wants us to drink his blood and eat his flesh. This is what we are doing now. That's assuming that we are doing it, not just listening and think, oh, that's cute. You know, that's interesting. You see, but going beyond that. Allowing God to speak to us and produce results. Bear fruit. And begin to change our attitude and humble ourselves before the living God. Instead of, you know, humiliating one another in public, oftentimes. Verse 13, and he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stayed. God respected that. God honored that, just like he honored the words of Stephen and others, you see. And he himself came on this earth and said the same words, because that's the same nature, the nature of God. Not vindictiveness, not vengefulness, you see. Even though now and then he needs to punish, but still, he is a merciful God and long-suffering. Realizes those people don't know what they're doing. They're insane people. And that's how they act. A lot of us are insane in our behavior and conduct, and we don't realize it. We think we are well, we are whole, we are without sin. Oh, the others, they are bad guys, you know, they've got all the problems. We don't. Verse 14, now they that died by the plague were 14,700. Imagine that. Imagine you wake up one day and you see the brethren behaving in that manner, and then 14,000 of them are gone in split second. That's going to leave an impression on us, isn't it? 14,700. Besides them that died about the matter of Korah. And Aaron returned unto Moses, unto the door of the tent of meeting, and the plague was stayed. You see, somebody stood at the gap. Somebody cared. Somebody had compassion and mercy on wicked people, on rebellious people. Somebody stood up and in essence spoke in their favor instead of against them like all the others. How many people are like that? Well, every single one of us has an opportunity to stand up and begin to look at the cloud and be counted and be pleasing in the sight of God and do the will of God instead of doing the will of the devil, which many do, and yet they call themselves the people of God. And so, God honored it, and the plague stayed. And verse 16, And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and take of them rods, one of each father's house, of all their princes according to their father's houses, 12 rods. Ye shall write every man's name upon his rod, and you shall write Aaron's name upon the rod of Levi. Or Levi. In other words, they're not convinced yet, you know, who is the one that I've chosen. Because of the carnality, I'm going to do it. Had there been men of faith, there wouldn't be need to do any of that. But there were not. So God says, okay, they want to know. You know, they still have difficulty understanding. They've got, you know, thick heads, coconut heads. Let's do that. So they would realize who are the ones that I've chosen. And let all the princes that came, and then you can be sure this time the princes were a little bit more careful. They were not as haughty and arrogant as, you know, as those others who died. And so he said, you take 12 rods, and you shall write every man's name upon his rod, and you shall write Aaron's name. Now, Moses was the one doing all that. You see? Not Aaron, and not the princes. He's the one supposed to do that. Write Aaron's name upon the rod of Levi. For there shall be one rod for the head of their father's houses, and you shall lay them up in the tent of meeting before the testimony, where I meet with you. The Holy of Holies. And it shall come to pass that the man whom I shall choose, he already chosen Aaron. You see, he already chosen the family of Aaron, and all of Israel knew it, and for a long time they had no problem with it, and suddenly the devil got into the midst of the congregation of God, into the people of God, and that's the best and favorite place of the devil. And many of us are too blind, even though academically we know it, to see it, or to realize it. And instead of resisting the devil and fleeing from him, we're resisting one another. That shows the insanity that is in us. And so he said, you shall lay them in the tent of meeting before the testimony where I meet with you, and it shall come to pass that the man whom I shall choose, his rod shall bud. And I will make to cease from me the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmur against you. You see? And one of these days, God is going to do it among us too. And hopefully, there aren't going to be dead people before that happens, in a plague, or whatever God chooses to do. So we can calm down, listen to the voice of God, see the clouds, see the glory of God, humble ourselves before Him, assume the same spirit and nature that He gave us, and walk in it and not in another spirit, and live at peace. You see? It's not going to be done by people getting together and discussing and, you know, and resolving their differences and things like that. That's all human efforts. That's not looking to God. That's not being led and guided by the Spirit of God. That's of our own doing. That's useless. People have to repent first, tear the clothes apart, so to speak, put dust on their head, realize, you know, the kind of people that we were, purge ourselves, you know, cleanse our heart. We're double-minded, as James would say. Get rid of all that poison, stench, and pollution that is in our hearts and our minds. Resist the devil, chase him out, and his demons, and their spirit in our midst, and their influence. You see? When that is done, then God comes down and dwells in our midst, and we live in harmony and peace and unity. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. You see, we can try all we want, humanly speaking, nothing is going to happen because God is not in it, unless the Lord shall build the house, the weary builders toil in vain. And it's very obviously, the Lord is not building this house. It's a house of Babylon. God is not in the Babylon business, you know, He's not the God of confusion. And that's what we have today to a large degree, unfortunately. And nobody is immune from it. Totally. And so, this is what he says here. He said, you speak to the children of Israel. We finished verse 20. Basically, God says there, you do that, and I will make to cease from me the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmur against you. Yeah. They see the human leader, they murmur against him. They don't see God. They don't realize that when they murmur against Moses, the murmur against God. Now, not everybody's a Moses. There are people who like to appoint themselves into that position and claim they are the Moses, or they are the Elijah, or they are this, or they are that. They've got identity crisis. They don't know who they are. Suffering from amnesia, you know, forgot the name that their father and mother gave them. They want to assume other names. And yet they speak against God when they behave in this manner. And Moses spoke unto the children of Israel, and all their princes gave them rods for each prince, one according. So Moses is the one that gave them the rods. He went and picked them up, chose them, and he gave it to every single one of them, and he wrote names on every single one of them. And all the princes, all the princes gave him rods. The other ones that gave him rods, he's the one that picked up the one of Aaron, not the princes. And so he gave him one for each father's houses, even 12 rods, and the rod of Aaron was among their rods. That's the one that Moses picked and wrote the name on it. And Moses laid up the rod before, that is the rods before the Eternal, in the tent of testimony. He put it there in the Holy of Holies. And God, this is the time and the place where God comes. And it came to pass on the morrow that Moses went into the tent of the testimony, and behold, the rod of Aaron for the house of Levi was budded. Not any other tribe, but Levi and Aaron specific. And put forth buds and bloomed blossoms and bore ripe almonds. So the rod was a rod of almond. And almond rods are very strong. I don't know where they got them at this point in the wilderness, but they had them. And certainly, all the rods were as dead as they can be, you know, as dead as a doorknob. And yet, here it is, one rod that was dead comes back to life, resurrection, and brings forth fruit. And many of us need to be resurrected because we're living like dead people, producing dead fruits. You see, dead works. And so this one budded and bought almonds, shaked in Hebrew. And it's very interesting what is happening here. You lose something in the translation also, and when we don't understand the language. What is shaked? Shaked comes from the word to be diligent. Lishkod. And you remember when God spoke to Jeremiah. He gave him a commission. Jeremiah was a very young man, probably about 17, something like that. He was a son of the high priest, Hilkiah. And he told him, as we read here in verse 11 of chapter 1 of Jeremiah, "Moreover, the word of the Eternal came to me, saying, Jeremiah, what do you see? And I said, I see a branch of an almond tree." It was a rod, just like the rod of Moses, or the rod of Aaron, the rod of all the other princes. You see, I see a rod. "And then the Lord said unto me, ye have seen well, for I am ready to perform my word." Now, in English, it doesn't mean anything. You know, you don't see any link, you don't understand. What does that mean? But in Hebrew, you read it. He says to Jeremiah, "What do you see?" He says, "I see shaked." You see? A branch of an almond tree. That's what he said. "I see shaked." And the Lord says, "Well, I am shaked on my word." In other words, I'm going to be diligent about bringing whatever I said that I'm going to bring upon Judah. And you see the link between the two. And so when Christ warned us, "Be you diligent," you see, watch and pray, that's what he's talking about. Shikdu. That's the word that he used in Hebrew. He spoke in Hebrew, didn't speak in English. And that's what he said. Well, you know, in the translation you lose everything and you totally miss everything that is happening here. So God is taking people, you see, that were dead. All of us were dead in our sins. Like a rod of almond. Shaked. And then he gets busy. He puts life in us. He resurrects us, so to speak. Gives us life. And we're alive now. We're alive in Christ. Apart from him, we're dead. "Without me," he said, "you can do nothing." And if we can do nothing, we're dead people. A lot of us are dead to a large degree. There's a little bit of us that is still growing because of our attitude. You see, because we're not eating and drinking of his blood and flesh as we should. And that shows in our attitude and our behavior and the way we treat one another, many of us, unfortunately. But God says, be diligent, like the shaked, just like I am diligent. And that's what the word watch and pray means. Watch, you see? Diligent. Be shaked, be shoked, shkod, you see? And this is what he's saying here, this is what he's showing here. So you see the link in the manner in which God does His work. And so this is what happens to the rod of Aaron. And blossomed with blossoms, you know, it budded forth first, you know, you have buds and then blossoms. And then ripe almonds, not little almonds, ripe. All there. Only God can do that. And if you want unity, only God can do that. Only God can bring us from the state in which we are to where we should be. You see? Where we can all bear abundance of fruit. You see? God gave us a sword to every single one of us to do battle with Christ. That is, to do battle with the devil, with the world. You know, the sword of the Word. And many people, not having the mind of God as they should, they take the sword and instead of sharpening one another, that's how we should use it among ourselves, you see, instead of sharpening one another, we're lacerating one another and wounding one another and bruising one another. Now, that's not what God called us to be. You've got a lot of people in the world that do that to each other, and they're all dead people. And so this is what he gave, you know, the witness to all of Israel. Here it is. And Moses brought out all the rods from before the Eternal unto the children of Israel. And all of them saw when he took those rods and took them inside into the tent. And now he comes out with all the rods. And every leader recognizes his own rod. And they still look as dead as they were before that. Because when God doesn't choose you, you see, no matter what you do, you're not going to have life. A lot of people think, all I have to do is just call on God and He's going to choose me. Well, if He chooses to do so, fine. But if He doesn't, He doesn't. There is nothing you can do for a person like that. A lot of people think that they can go and convert people. Well, you can give them knowledge academically, but that's all it is. But they're not going to come back to life. Unless God gives them life. Unless God calls them. Unless God causes them to approach Him. And many of us have forgot that, so everybody wants to be an evangelist. I think they've got the power to go and deliver, you know, people from death and convert them and change their minds and hearts. You can't give them life. Only God can. You cannot make them from a dead rod into a blossoming almond tree where the fruit are already ripe. And many of us have forgotten that. That's why, you know, there are an awful lot of people out there doing their own work. I think that they've got the power to do it. Now, if God doesn't do it in us, unless He is the one that builds the house, unless He is the one calling, unless He is the one pouring the Spirit, unless He is the one, as Paul said, that when it pleased the Father, when it pleased Him, not when it pleased me, or somebody else, you know, that was doing the work and came to me. When it pleased the Father, as He told the Galatians in chapter 1, to reveal His Son in me. And it only when that happens, that life begins in us. So all of us who are wasting our time doing our own work, that's all we are doing. We're going in circles. And we're producing nothing, because without Christ we can do nothing. Now if He's in it, wonderful. But if He's not His and called us to do it, it's not our business to do it. And many of us just, you know, want to do their own thing. And it feels good. And the Lord put it in my heart, and a lot of them say, to do this and to do that. Well, we shall find out when the time comes whether their work was gold or silver, whether it was straw or wood. And so verse 24, he comes, Moses, before all the children of Israel with the rods, from before the Eternal unto all the children of Israel, and they looked and took every man his rod, disappointed, just as dead as it was before that. And the Lord said unto Moses, put back the rod of Aaron before the testimony to be kept there for a token against the rebellious children. And many of us are still in that state of mind, unfortunately. That there may be made an end of the murmurings against me. Well, in one sense you might say, that's not the kind of people they were. They were going to continue to murmur. But anyway, he was wishing for the best. That they die not. Thus did Moses, as the Eternal commanded him. Everything, as the Eternal commanded him. How many of us live our life like that? As the Eternal commanded us, as Moses commanded us, as Christ, as the apostles, you know, all the teachings that come directly from the Father through Christ to us, you see, the ultimate head of the body. And, you know, he's the head of Christ, and Christ is the head of the body, and so forth. As the Lord commanded Moses. That's how Moses did. For him, life was very simple. That was the simplicity in Christ for him. And we should go by that simplicity of Christ and of Moses. And so as the Lord commanded him, so did he. And the children of Israel spoke unto Moses, saying, behold, we perish. We are undone. We are all undone. You see? That means we are all lost. We have no hope. And everyone that comes near unto the tabernacle of the Eternal is to die. Shall we wholly perish? Now what kind of an attitude is that? Who's trying to kill them? Nobody's trying to kill them. When God came down on Mount Sinai, He wanted to speak to them, have fellowship with them. He didn't come to kill them, and they thought He's going to kill them. What enters into the mind of people that causes them to think that way? Well, people of rebellion, people who do their own thing, people who are self-minded, independent, haughty and arrogant, seek their own thing, do their own thing. You see? They talk like that. That's insanity. And that's what they were. Insane to the core. And God had to put all of them in the ground. At least they can do some good there, you know, for the worms. And chapter 18. And the Eternal said unto Aaron, you and your sons and your father's house with you shall bear the iniquity of the sanctuary. In other words, you are the ones who are going to atone for it, just like Christ is the one that is atoning for the sanctuary, and we are His sanctuary, His temple. And you and your sons with you shall bear the iniquity of your priesthood. And Christ didn't have to bear the iniquity of His priesthood because He didn't commit any sin, but these are men that do commit sin. In other words, the leader should first mind his own business, make sure that he is clean and pure before God, that he's got a nice mouth, not, you know, a clean mouth, not a filthy mouth, you see, not one that puts down others, accuses others, speaks evil of others, being an example in that way, you know, to all those that follow him to be likewise, you see. So the priests have to make sure that first they are above reproach. And that's how later on the elders were chosen. People who are blameless, above reproach. Not people who are experts in gossip or in speaking evil of one another. You see, who have ill reputation to begin with, and yet they want to be the leaders. Verse 2, and your brethren also, the tribe of Levi, the tribe of your father, bring you near you, that they may be joined unto you. And they became the servants of Aaron in that way. And that God decided that. Aaron was not the one that was going to exercise dominion authority over them. That's the way God said it. You know, you Levites, you're going to serve the family of Aaron, also Levites. And they shall minister unto you, you and your sons with you being before the tent of the testimony. And they shall keep your charge. Whatever you charge them, they're going to do it. And the charge of all the tent, whatever is necessary to be done there in the tent, later on in the temple. Only they shall not come near unto the holy furniture and unto the altar. But unless God calls you to a certain place, you don't belong there. That's what, in essence, what He's saying there. And a lot of people to this day don't understand it. They have no knowledge of the law of God. They don't have the knowledge of the mind of God, of the nature of God. How can you put on the mind of Christ if you don't know what His mind is all about? If you reject His nature, His character, that is revealed in His law, in His teachings, in His Torah. People living a fairy tale religion, you know, make believe ethereal, that is meaningless. How do you put on holiness without knowing the law of God that tells you what holiness is? And so he says, none of them shall come nigh unto the holy furniture and unto the altar, that they die not. God is not a respecter of persons. A lot of people are doing it in many ways and have no fear of God. And they don't realize what is ahead. So he says, they better not do it, because otherwise they're going to die. And so, don't do it, so that they die not, neither they nor you. You see? Because if you allow them, if you let them get away with it, you two are going to pay the penalty for it. So he's holding them responsible. He's holding Aaron responsible. He's holding the priest responsible. You see, for not allowing that to happen. And to this very day, the same principle is still there. If we fear God, if we obey the law of God, if we drink His flesh and eat, you know, that is, if we drink His blood and eat His flesh, we know how to behave. You see, and we should not do it of our own accord. You see, but of the accord of God, as the Lord commanded Moses, as the Lord commands us in His Word, and we must study it day and night. The only way we're going to have understanding and discerning spirit and comprehension, and be able to know if this is of God or is it of me? Is it my own pride and arrogance and haughtiness and self-righteousness or, you know, willingness to exercise dominion authority over others, or is it of God? A lot of people don't do that. And so many decisions they make in leadership comes from their own mind and not from God. And it's important to study the law of God day and night before we can get to that point, and very few of them do it. You can see it in their actions and their behavior and their conduct and their attitudes. Verse 4. It says, and they shall be joined unto you, speaking by the Levites, and keep the charge of the tent of meeting, whatsoever the service of the tent may be. Any responsibility you have there, you assign it to them, they better do it or else. It's as simple as that. That's the simplicity in Christ. You do what I say, nobody gets hurt. But a common man, non-Levite, a zar, a stranger, not common, stranger. Now, people say the common people. Now, what I mean by that? As far as the tent is concerned, you're a stranger. You see? You see the stranger over there, you say, hey, stranger, what are you doing here? You're not a Levite. Or if a priest sees a Levite, you know, getting too close to getting into the area of the furniture or the items that are inside the tent, he says, hey, stranger, what are you doing here? You see? That's what he's talking about here. So the stranger, well, it says in English, a common man, shall not draw nigh unto you. And you shall keep the charge of the holy things and the charge of the altar, that there be wrath no more upon the children of Israel. So you have your responsibility, they have theirs, and everybody does that which is right and obeys the will of God and does everything as the Lord commanded Moses, and everything goes well. That's how harmony returns to the people of God, when all begin to obey the laws of God. Not just yak, 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 you know, and talk and have conferences and then wishful thinking and things like that. Obedience is lacking among the people of God. Rebellion is present everywhere. Arrogance and haughtiness and attitude. That's our problem. We're all sick. And repentance is required everywhere. And fasting, you see, and renting our garments and so forth. This is where we are. Verse 6, and I, behold, I have taken your brethren, the Levites, from among the children of Israel. I've done it. Israel laid hands on them, but I'm the one that did it. So it's all of God. And unless God calls us, we cannot be in any given position unless God places us there. You see? And too many people want to do things they have no business doing, whichever it may be. Or assume certain responsibilities for which they have no gifts that God didn't give them, just because they feel, and I'm just as good as you are. We have to realize the cloud is above us. God is watching. He sees everything. Nothing hides from His eyes. And our behavior is being recorded, and every word that proceeds out of our mouth is going to stand as a witness against us in the day of judgment, and the penalty will be executed at that point. So, by the word of your mouth, you shall be judged. That's what Christ told us. It's what the God of Israel is saying. And unless He had done it, unless He has caused us to approach Him, we should just keep our distance and stay where we belong. And so this is what He says here. And I, behold, I have taken your brethren, the Levites, from among the children of Israel. For you, they are given as a gift unto the Eternal. Not for yourself, not for your selfish reasons. You know, some ministers used to do for a long time. They had a trainee and they, you know, make use of them for selfish gain. You know, that's corruption of the mind and, you know, the nature of the person. Unfortunately, that man doesn't fear God, and many have done that without fear of God, without honor and respect to the person that was in their charge. So He reminded them, I give to you unto the Lord, not for yourself. Don't you be selfish. Don't mistreat them to do the service of the tent of meeting. That's their purpose, not to do your bidding. You think, you know, that you should do yourself or your own family should do. Verse 7, and you and your sons with you shall keep your priesthood. You mind your own business and let them do their own business in everything that pertains to the altar and to that within the veil. And you shall serve. You see, that's what you're supposed to do. I give you the priesthood as a service of gift. I'm giving it to you. You don't take it to yourself. You don't exalt yourself. You see, and there was a time in the days of the Second Temple after the death of Christ. It got so bad there that people, even in the day during the days of Christ, they were vying, you know, for the priesthood. They were fighting one another. They were murdering, killing one another. And before Christ came on the scene, the days of the Maccabean, you see, they were priests. Although the Maccabeans, the Hasmonean family, and they were murdering one another. You read in Josephus, killing one another. And unfortunately, a lot of people do it to this very day in many other ways. But God says, I'm the one who gave it to you. I give you the priesthood as a service of gift. Does God give us whatever we have? Or do we take it to ourselves? Well, let's think about it. Anyway, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph, greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.